Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Tuesday, April the 3rd. Today, we're going to reconnect with our good friend, Fernando Hernandez. You know, we've had Fernando on the program before. He has written several books, and today we're going to talk about his new book called Cuba and the USA, A Musical Journey. It's a fascinating book. I'm going to recommend all of you to get your hands on it because it's the kind of book that, it does two things. It gives you a lot of information, which is a common denominator in all of Fernando's books, but it's also very entertaining. And at least in my case, it's going to remember or bring me back names or people that I had not heard in a while. And so we're going to be looking at Xavier Cugat, who happened to be, every time I say that name, it just reminds me of my late father, who always would love listening to his LPs. My father loved Cugat, or as he used to say, Cugat. I'm not sure how exactly it was pronounced, but that's how my dad would say. So Xavier Cugat is a man who brings me a lot of memories of my father. Bebo Valdez, another interesting figure from the past, Candido Guerrera. Two more recent figures, Paquito de Rivera and Arturo Sandoval, two what I would call post-Castro musicians, who were very fortunate to leave the country, and we were able to appreciate their talents outside of Cuba. And then, of course, we're going to take care of the ladies. I mean, how can you do a show or a book about Cuban music without remembering the ladies? And Tania León and Graciela are two of the ones that we're going to remember. So a lot of music today, a lot of musical history, a lot of history, which is, of course, what always happens when our friend Fernando is on. So let me say hello from Dallas to Fernando Hernandez. How are you, my friend? Congratulations on the book.
Thank you, Sylvia. I appreciate it. Hello to all the nice folks there in Dallas and nationwide listening to this program.
Thank you so much. And we give special salute. I know you posted the show, I think, over at the Pedro Pan Facebook page, so we want to say hello to all of the Pedro Pans out there. Do you say Pedro Panistas, or you just call them Pedro Pans?
Actually, we call ourselves Pedro Panes.
Okay, Pedro Panes. Okay, I like that. I like that. And of course, before we get to the show, a couple of things that I wanted you to share with us was your own story, fascinating story as a Pedro Pan yourself. Just talk a little bit about the other books you've written, just sort of so that we can put the whole thing in proper context. So your story, Fernando, and the books.
Yes. Regarding Pedro Pan, for those of you who may not be familiar with the Operation Pedro Pan, Operation Pedro Pan was a clandestine movement initiated by the United States through the Catholic Church between 1960 and 1962, where over 14,000 unaccompanied minors were able to leave Cuba and arrive in the United States in an orderly, organized manner. My brother was 11, I was 9, when we arrived by ourselves in 1962, July the 8th, 1962. We were reunited with our parents in 1966. We lived with a cousin first in Miami for about 9 months. And then we moved up to the Big Apple and lived with a maternal aunt until our parents arrived. Now, regarding, as you mentioned, my previous books, this is my third book regarding Cuban Americans in the United States. The first book that I wrote is called The Cubans, Our Legacy in the United States, followed up by The Cubans, Our Footprints Across America. this particular book called Cuba and the USA, A Mystical Journey, is very specific because it deals directly with Cuban musicians who immigrated to the United States from the 1930s up until the present time and their influence in the American musical landscape.
Great. Super, super, super introduction there. I have to ask you before we get to the details of the book, the first two books that you wrote, we got to know those books rather well because we had you on the show several times. This particular book, what inspired you to write this book? I mean, when did you decide one day, you know what, this is a story that I need to tell? When did you do that, Fernando?
Actually, I've had this feeling to write this particular type of book for the last couple of years. And I've been kicking around different ideas and should I do it, should I do it. And I think I said to myself, there's a story to be told. Because when I did the research for the book, I was really taken back at the amount of very, very masterful musicians who came from Cuba to the United States and really changed the landscape, especially in the jazz genre. The Cuban musicians really made a big difference in American jazz. And obviously the typical salsa, which is, the Cuban song. But I said to myself, there's a lot of good information that people will really enjoy reading about how this small island nation, talk about before 1959, 6 million people, could
sure
produce so many outstanding musicians.
That is such a – and we talked at length about this when we did our previous shows, but that to me is just absolutely incredible how this small island of Cuba before Castro was able to produce not just the numbers but the variety of musicians. I mean, it's amazing to me for anybody who, like our parents, who got to live in Cuba in the 1940s and the 1950s. I mean, the variety of Cuban music was just absolutely phenomenal. The Cuban composers, Cuban orchestra leaders. It was just fascinating. And I don't know, how else to say that than to have someone like yourself. Write this book. I've said this before on our shows, and I'll say it again. I think the Cuban American story, if you think of a bookshelf, we need to put as many books as possible in there so that future generations can understand our Cuban American story because it's so unique. Well, what if I tell you at the very top that my very favorite Cuban musician, I know we're not going to necessarily talk about him, but I'll just briefly say it, that I always say that if I got lost in an island or if I was left in an island by myself and they said you can have one piece of Cuban music, I would say Benny Moré. To me, he is the greatest of all the Cuban performers, and I know he's not part of your story, but that's the one that really stands out in my mind. But the other one, too, and this one brings me so many memories of my late father, is Xavier Cugat, or Cuga, as my father used to say, Fernando.
Yes, actually, Benny Moré to me is the epitome of Cuban music, even
yes,
though he's not in my book because I concentrated on those folks who actually made an impact in the United States. Benny Moré really made a name for himself in Mexico, and then he went back to Cuba and he really blossomed there. But I agree, Benny Moré is an outstanding feature in Cuban history. Now, regarding Xavier Cugat, interesting person because he was born in Barcelona.
Right.
But when he was 3 years old, his family moved to Havana, and he studied music in Havana because one of his neighbors gave him, when he was a little boy, gave him a violin. Then he started tinkering with it, and he got into the music, studied music in Cuba, moved to Los Angeles, California, try to make headway there in California, and eventually he got some following and started the Xavier Cugat Band. And the interesting thing about him, Silvio, is the fact that he was a ladies' man. He would, I think he married three of his band's female singers. he hired them as singers, then they ended up being his wives. And the last one was the famous Charo with their infamous Coochie Coochie that we always remember from the Johnny Carson show, you know?
There must have been quite a difference in age between Charo and Cougar.
Oh, yeah. Charo was from what I can recall. I mean, she's still alive. She died when he was 90. But I think that, you know, his last marriage with Charo, I think it was basically a lot for publicity because, you know, he was an old guy. Now, the thing about him, talk about Xavier Cugat, he was one of the folks that came to Miami in the 1930s because the snowbirds from New York City would flock down to Miami looking for warm weather. And he had his band and he started playing, you know, Cuban music, the rumba, stuff like that. And there he met Desi Arnaz, because Desi Arnaz had been to New York City with his own band. And then Xavier Cugat said, hey, come on down, join my band here in Miami, which Desi did. He went to Miami. But interesting, and I love the story. This is from a book by a lady called Sue Stewart. She said that when Desi came back from New York, that he couldn't find people that basically most of his musicians, talking about Desi Arnaz, were non-Latino musicians. So they did not know how to play Cuban music. So Arnaz came up with this clever idea that he had his mother stitch or sew a bunch of rumba shirts with frilly sleeves, and then he coached Desi. He coached the band Cuban carnival routines that he had learned as a child, because he figured that his musicians were very inadequate, right? So and he could not find good drummers. He could not find good bongueros. So what did Desi do? He strapped a conga drum over his shoulder, and he played it while he danced, and he led the band around like carnival drummers. Now, this is a historical bit of news for those listening. The author, this lady Stewart, says that what Desi did was he got the band drunk on Bacardi, okay? And then he gave the band members bongos, percussion instruments, and he led them around the nightclub to a conga rhythm. Then the audience went crazy, and then they started getting up and doing the conga, happily following Desi Arnaz, okay? Now, this thing about the conga line, people attribute this to Desi Arnaz, but really it was another Cuban who really originally started the conga line dance movement, and that was Miguelito, Mr. Babalu Valdez, who started the line dance of conga in New York. But Desi's 1-2-3 kick conga line thing was the one that really caught the people's attention.
Well, no, it's a great story. There's a lot of great stories about Desi Arnaz. I know when we did our show before, we did a whole segment on Desi Arnaz, and he is just an amazing, a truly amazing entertainer. He also became an amazing businessman, something that a lot of people forget. I mean, he had a lot of influence in the early days of television with Desi Lu and everything else. But one of the amazing things about Cugat is that, and this is not for our show, but about 6 months ago, I decided to buy an album of Cugat. You know, I wanted to see what was available and all this digital format stuff. And, you know, it is incredible the number of LPs or albums, I guess they're now called CDs or whatever they're called now, but albums, collections of songs, let's say, that he recorded. I don't know the number, but I wouldn't be surprised if Cugat recorded 100 albums in his career of different... I mean, maybe even more, Fernando. I don't know if you have that number, but it's amazing how many he had.
Yeah, I don't have the exact number.
Sure.
But we have to give Xavier Cugat a lot of credit because he was the one who popularized the Roomba in the United
yes.
States. And he did pave the way for other band leaders who played in Latin styles. So he really opened up the door. Now, the thing about Xavier Cugat was that amazing businessman as well, because he moved to New York in 1933, and he opened up what they call the Starlight Roof of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel. You can imagine, that's the fanciest place in New York City.
That's
now,
right.
He was there for 16 years.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, he was there for 16 years, and he began very humbly as a relief band, earning $500 a week. And then at the end of 16 years, he and his band was the hotel's highest paid band at $7,000 a week plus a percentage of the cover charges. Wow.
I cannot help but when you were telling that story, I could not help but think about that great novel, The Mambo Kings.
Yes.
That later became a movie, because that was another great story of a couple of Cubans. But I, you know, if I had said to you, here's a story. Let's say, let's go make a movie. Let's make a movie about a guy born in Barcelona who goes to Havana, picks up a violin, ends up in Miami playing music for a bunch of snowbirds, then goes to New York and becomes, you know, very successful, and then runs into a kid named Desi Arnaz, and then marries Charo. Let's take that to him. Let's take that to a movie producer and see if they'll buy that script. I mean, but it's just unbelievable, the story of Cugat. I mean, I don't know. I mean, somebody's got to – I'm sure somebody's written a book about him. I'm pretty sure they have. But
oh,
let's
sure.
go from Cugat.
No.
Oh, I'm sure they
yeah,
have.
Right?
I'm sure you saw them as part of your research. Let's do Bebo Valdez next, and then we'll take a quick break. So Bebo Valdez, that is another great name of music. Tell us about Bebo.
Yeah, actually, Bebo Valdez – He like many other Cuban musicians, have a very long name, Dionisio Ramon Emilio Valdez Amaro, but he's known as Bebo Valdez. He died at, I believe, he's like 93, 94 years of age. But Bebo Valdez, he was an outstanding musician. He was a pianist. He was a band leader. He was a composer, and he was an arranger. He started playing in Havana's nightclubs during the 1940s. And the important thing about Bebo Valdez was the fact that he played a very important role in the adaptation of the mambo into the big band format during the 1940s and 1950s. And Bebo was able to develop a new rhythm called batanga, and the batanga was a rhythm that competed with the mambo of Pérez Prado. So that was an interesting aspect of him, of Bebo Valdez. He
wow.
was also very influential in the growth of the incipient Afro-Cuban jazz scene in Havana, and he was involved in jam sessions that were commissioned by an American producer by the name of Norman Granz during 1952. A lot of folks, Silvio, are unaware that in Cuba there was a strong sense of trying to develop jazz, American jazz,
mm-hmm.
in Cuba
yes.
by Cuban musicians. Now, he, talking about Bebo Valdez, he was the one that when Nat King Cole went to Cuba in 1958 to record an album called Call Español.
Mm-hmm.
It was Bebo Valdez who was there helping Nat King Cole sing in Spanish all those songs that we're very familiar with in that
right.
famous album in 58.
One of his, by the way, one of his best albums, the one that he recorded in Cuba, where he sang in Spanish. And one of the very best, I think, one of the very best Nat King Cole albums. It really shows his versatility as a musician, as a singer, I should say, as a vocalist. But that was a fabulous album. But let me take a couple of minutes here before we go on break. I just want to develop
sure.
a topic here, because one of the things you do in your book, of course, is talk about jazz. And I remember one time talking to a friend from New Orleans, and in the history of New Orleans, there was a Cuba New Orleans connection that had a lot to do with shipping. You know, there was a lot of commercial ships that would go back and forth. And of course, New Orleans, the birth of the jazz, Cuba with its own musical history. And how much of that connection do you think had to do with the interest in jazz in Cuba? Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, Cuban jazz is fabulous, absolutely fabulous, to the point that, and this is talking now about the current regime of Castro, but Radio Havana, the state shortwave international station, actually had a program of Cuban jazz every night that they would broadcast to the world. And it was, you know, I didn't always listen to it, but a couple of times I did. It was fantastic, the jazz that can be claimed as Cuban jazz, something that, believe me, a lot of people don't know, this incredible story of Cuban jazz. So take a couple of minutes and explain why you think jazz happened in Cuba, Fernando.
Yeah, actually, one of the things that, historically speaking, was during the Spanish-American War, a lot of the freed Black American slaves came to fight in the Spanish-American Civil War. So when they went to Havana, they picked up Cuban music, they picked up Cuban styles of music, and when they returned to New Orleans, they incorporated some of these new rhythms into the nascent jazz movement in the United States. Now, regarding what you mentioned about the shipping aspect, there were regular ferries, regular voyages by ships from New Orleans to Havana. And Cuban musicians would go to New Orleans, and musicians from New Orleans would go to Cuba, and they would play together music. And some of the New Orleans musicians, they adapted the habanera as part of their musical history. So there is a very strong link between early American jazz and Cuban influence in American jazz, as you mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, it is an amazing connection, Fernando. It is an amazing connection that even Cubans don't know. I mean, I had to learn about it, about the tremendous originality and creativity of Cuban jazz. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break, and then when we come back from the break, we'll get into some of the other artists like Candido Guerrero, Paquito Rivera, Sandoval, Tania León, and Graciela, to talk about a couple of ladies. So we'll get into all of those ladies and all of those men after we take a little break. And I want you to hear now from my friend, my good friend, Carlos Guedes. Probably will love this show and have a chance to hear it.
This is Carlos Guedes Harpist. I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Sisiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sisiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to Carlos' Twitter schedule, or the schedule on Twitter, and on the show information. But I'm going to, Carlos, if you're listening to me, and I know you listen to the show, normally you listen to the podcast, but if you're listening to me right now, I want you to take note of playing the next time you go around, find me something by Bebo Valdez and play that. I think that your audience is going to enjoy it a great deal. Let's get back to our friend Fernando Hernandez, the author of a wonderful new book, Cuba and the USA, A Musical Journey. You know, and that title is somewhat, if I may just ask you this quick question about the title, because titles are often so interesting, but the titles of your three books do have something in common in the sense that Cubans and Americans are doing something together. Am I getting that? Am I understanding that correctly, Fernando?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. You know, there's an island off the coast of Cuba called La Isla de la Juventud, before it used to call La Isla de my mind escapes me now. Isla de Pino. Isla de Pino.
Yeah, Isla de Pino, right.
And then the governor sent it to the Isle of Youth. And I remember seeing books, Silvio, of many Americans who had immigrated to Cuba in the early 1900s. There was an American colony in Isla de Pinos, or Isle of the Youth, and they loved living in Cuba. They had farms. They had businesses. They were well integrated with their Cuban neighbors. So I have this sense that of unity, of friendship, that I think our two nations are bound, and this mm-hmm. is why some of these titles that I put, like this title, A Musical Journey, because we are the musical aspect, we go together hand by hand.
Absolutely. Well, the music is so similar. I think that's why it makes a lot of sense. By the way, you mentioned Isla de Pinos, known in English as the Isle of Pines, for those of you who may not know where that island is. If you look at the map of Cuba, there's a big island to the south. Take Havana and go south, and you'll see this big island, which unfortunately is also the place where a lot of Cuban political prisoners, including my father's late uncle, Ignacio Segurola, that's where he's my late father's cousin, who passed away recently also, Dr. Ignacio Segurola, that's where he spent much of his time as a political prisoner. But the island itself does have a great history, and what you said about Americans is true. In fact, a great article came out, I think it was in National Geographic, about this island about 10 years ago, and I remember reading it, and I'm going to look it up again now that you reminded me of Isla de Pinos. Okay, well, let's go now to, we've got Guerrero de Rivera, Sandoval. Take it from here. Tell me which one you want to do next.
Okay, let's give the ladies a chance here, because
all right, let's do this.
Cuban women are very, very important in the musical landscape.
Absolutely.
This particular lady, her name is Graciela. Her full name is Graciela Perez Gutierrez. Now, for those of us who are familiar with song and salsa, we are familiar with the names of La Lupe, and also Celia Cruz. However, before La Lupe and before Celia Cruz in New York, there was this lady called Graciela who was singing the night away in New York nightclubs with a tremendous voice. Now, she died in 2010 when she was like 93 years old. She was still recording. She was still writing. Amazing lady, Graciela. Who was this lady? Well, actually, she was known as the first lady of Latin jazz, very much into the Afro-Cuban singing aspect of Latin jazz. Now, we have to remember, Sylvia, that here is a woman who pioneered into a man's world, which is the musical world, okay? But she opened the door for a lot of these ladies like Celia Cruz and La Lupe. Now, she performed all over the world, United States and Europe and South and Central America. She was very much in line with another musician who happened to be her adoptive older brother, Machito, first Frank Machito Grillo, who had Afro-Cuban jazz band in New York City. Now, the thing about Graciela was that she had a tremendous voice. She was very risque, very sassy, very provocative during her presence in the stage. And she sang a lot of songs that had a double meaning, if you know what I mean. So she could go from a jazzy guaracha as well as a very romantic bolero.
Right.
Now she started in New York in 1943 because her adoptive brother, Machito, had been drafted into the United States Army. So she joined the orchestra to replace him. And lo and behold, they stayed together, Machito and her and Bauza, until 1975, like 30-odd years. Yeah, amazing.
It really is. It really is. By the way, just out of curiosity, some listeners may want to do a quick – I know you have references in your book, of course, And you know, that's one of the great things you always do. That's one of the great things you do in your books. You have a lot of references, which are wonderful for people to follow up and do this and that. But I don't remember in your book, are there YouTubes available of people like Graciela? I mean, she would be like an amazing YouTube. I mean, you talk about a YouTube experience. Watching her has to be one of them, I would think. I have not done that. I have not checked it, but I'm sure you have.
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, I was going to recommend to the listening audience to go to YouTube and look up Graciela. That's her stage name. She went by Graciela. Her best song is a 1955 tune called CC No No. Exactly the way it is.
You talk about double language, speaking and speaking in double meaning, as Cuban women like to do. You know, they always say yes when they mean no, and say no when they mean yes. Right?
Absolute gem of a song. I bet it is.
I'm gonna check that as soon as we're done.
Yes, please
Graciela.
Please do.
So it's Graciela, CC, or no C, no, no C? Is that how it goes?
No, it's like, it's a CC, no, no.
Oh, okay. Graciela, CC, no, no. Okay. That is a marvelous title, because that's the way Cuban women talk. See? No. Don't tell Josie. Tell her.
No.
Tell her it's a joke. Josie, it's only a joke.
I agree.
How about Tania León?
Okay. The other lady, Tania León. Let me look up here my information, because I'm sitting here at my desk, and I have all this type of information here. But,
sure.
Oh, by the way, as I look for this information, just wanted to let you know that Graciela, she won Grammy Awards as well, and she was the other person that I'm hopefully we'll have time to discuss is Candido Camera,
right? He's on the list.
Who was probably the best percussionist or bongocero that Cuba ever produced, and they did an album which she was part of, and that's what she got the Grammy Award.
Let me just say something real quick for some of the audience who may not, because we're using some words that I know you and I know what they mean, but I just want to make sure that some of the audience who may not be familiar with Cuban slang, bongocero is someone who would play bongos. And if the best way to explain bongos is to imagine Ricky Ricardo or Desi Arnaz with his, you know, playing Babalu. I mean, that's what a bongo is. And so Desi Arnaz, in many ways, was your classic, your classic bongocero. So a bongocero is someone who plays that instrument. Okay, well, let's go to Candido then. If we're done with Tania, let's go to Candido. We have Tania. All right, go ahead.
I got the information here for Tania. Now,
good.
I have to confess, Sylvia, that when I did the research, I had no idea who Tania León was or is. I had no idea. And I was really very much impressed, because this lady, she is a composer. She's a conductor. She has been profiled on ABC, CBS, PBS, all kinds of media outlets, okay? Now, she has written operas, okay? She has done ensembles. She has conducted orchestras in Germany, Switzerland, France, Mexico. One of her operas won the BMW Prize as Best New Opera in Munich, Germany. And a lot of her music also includes those of Cuban background. One of her works is called Baches. Also have Indígena, which is one of her collection of chamber music, Carabalí, which was performed by the Louisville Orchestra's first edition, and she has also performed or conducted El Manicero, probably the most well-known Cuban song worldwide is El Manicero by Moisés Simmons, which is the peanut vendor. Peanut vendor.
Right.
Now, this lady, and I'm trying to be as brief as possible, because
sure.
she has won a ton of awards, such as the New York Governor's Lifetime Achievement Award. She's
wow.
got honorary degrees from Colgate University, Oberlin College, all kinds of awards. Now, this is the thing. She's very much involved in the community in New York City. She was
mm-hmm.
the founding member and first music director of the Dance Theater of Harlem, establishing their music department, music school, and orchestra. She's also a faculty member at Brooklyn College. Now, one of the final things I'd like to say about Tania Leung is that in 2008, she served as United States Artistic Ambassador of American Culture in Madrid, Spain. And in April of that year, she held a composer-conductor residency at the Beijing Central Conservatory in China. So therefore,
wow.
A very outstanding composer-conductor that many of us, when I say many of us, I'm saying those of us of Cuban background, perhaps we have never heard of her. But
no,
I
have to confess, that was a name that I was not familiar with, but this is obviously a very successful lady. Now, did I say the next name correctly? Please correct me if I'm wrong. Did I say Cándido Guerrero, or was there a different name?
Yeah, it's a different name. His last
okay,
name
I'm sorry.
Is
that's my fault.
No, it's okay. No problem. His last name is Cándido Camero. Camero.
Okay, I mean, Camero. Okay, so
yeah.
I said Guerrero. I apologize. Yeah, Camero. Okay.
No, that's
all
okay.
Right.
Now, Cándido Camero, he is still alive. He is 96 years old.
Wow.
And I believe he is still playing, okay?
Wow.
Now, there's a famous quote, I'm paraphrasing, from jazz legend Tony Bennett. And Tony Bennett said about Cándido, he said, Cándido arrived in the United States with his three congas, and jazz music was changed forever. Changed
wow,
forever.
And that's Tony Bennett said that. That man is pretty
yeah,
remarkable.
Tony Bennett.
I mean,
yes,
that's pretty remarkable coming from Tony Bennett.
Now, the thing about his expertise in playing the bongos or the drums is that he was the first player, the first percussionist, to develop techniques to play multiple conga drums, coordinated independence, and the use of multiple percussion, whereas most bongo players would only play one conga. He
right.
played three. So he established a new paradigm, a new standard as a conga player in the world.
Wow. Remember Pacheco in the 70s? He must have been influenced by Cándido, I would think. Pacheco, was it Pacheco in the 70s who was the great bongo player of he used to play with El Gran Combo, but he was in that Fania All-Stars album. Pacheco, you know who I'm talking? Is it Pacheco? Was it?
Pacheco, you talk about Rey Barreto?
Rey Barreto, I'm sorry, Barreto.
Yeah, yeah.
Barreto.
Rey Barreto was one of the great New York Ricans, and when I mean
yes.
New York Ricans, those are folks who were born in New York of Puerto Rican
right.
background. And Rey Barreto was a great bongo player, percussionist, just like Cándido. And then we had also Tito Puente, also a New York Rican.
Yes.
Who started
right,
in
right.
the big band area, playing Latin music, etc. And we still have one more that was born in New York, that Willie, his last name escapes me right now, also Puerto Rican descent, who has Willie Colon,
yeah, that was another great one. I'll tell you what we're going to do, Fernando. Let's go ahead and do another segment. Let me take a little break here.
Okay.
break, and then when we come back, we'll do a segment on the others. The others still remaining, Rivera, Sandoval, and talk a little bit about those two who are very recent, and whatever else you wanted to say about Camero that maybe we didn't have a time to get to. So we're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from some of our sponsors, and then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with my good friend Fernando Hernandez, the author of Cuba and the USA, A Musical Journey. I love that title. That's a great, absolutely great title. We'll be right back. Chatting with my good friend Fernando Hernandez, the author of Cuba and the USA, A Musical Journey. But I've got to throw a little Ray Barreto trivia question at you. If anybody knows, okay. You do. Okay. I mean, if anybody knows this, you do, because you're the, I think next to me, the expert. No, just joking. You're the expert. I'm not. I just do the interviews. But here's a great trivia question. I came across this by pure mistake. Not mistake, but you know when you find things you're not looking for?
Yes.
There's a Bee Gees album called Main Course. It came out in the summer of 75. I think it's their best album. It included Jive Talking, Nights on Broadway. It was just a very good album. One of the songs on that album is called Wind of Change, which, by the way, was the B-side or the flip side, for those of us who remember 45s, was the B-side of Jive Talking in the United States, and it got some airplay on the radio, not as much as Jive Talking, but quite a bit. The Ray Barreto is in that track. He plays bongos in that track with the Bee Gees, and I discovered this by looking at the album, looking at the personnel, and I said, Ray Barreto, wow. So that's Ray Barreto for you. Okay, well, let's get back to our others. We have Paquito de Rivera, Arturo Sandoval, and if you have anything else to say about Camero, or you want to flow into those two.
Let me transition into the last two because of time constraints here. Now, he is definitely an icon, and I'm referring to Arturo Sandoval. Now, Arturo Sandoval, he's a multi-talented person because he plays the trumpet. He's known as a trumpetist, a trumpeter, but he also plays other instruments. Yeah, he plays the flugel horn as well, and he's not only a jazz musician, but he's also a classical artist. He's a pianist, and he's a composer as well. He came to the United States in 1990 when he defected from Cuba. He became an American citizen in 1999, and he started in Cuba playing jazz, actually with a Grammy Award-winning group, which is Iraquere. He was part of Iraquere, which still exists today. And that's traditional jazz, classical rock, and traditional Cuban music. Now, he has been awarded 10 Grammy Awards, 6 Billboard Awards, the 2013 Presidential Medal of Freedom, 2015 Hispanic Heritage Award recipient, 2016 Honorary Doctorate recipient in Fine Arts from the University of Notre Dame, and an Emmy Award. Now, the amazing thing about Arturo Sandoval is that he's always doing things, always doing things. He has performed with John Williams, who's well-renowned, on Williams' original trumpet concerto with the London Symphony Orchestra. He has performed in Super Bowls with Celine Dion, John Williams, and with Tony Bennett and Patti LaBelle. Now, you talk about a guy that knows how to play.
Sure.
He has recorded with people such as Dizzy Gillespie, Woody Herman, Woody Shaw, and a bunch of other folks, such including Johnny Mathis, Frank Sinatra, Paul Anka, Rod Stewart, and Tony Bennett, as well as others. How we're doing there with time?
Yeah, we have a few more minutes. Go ahead and tell me about Paquito de Rivera.
Okay, now, Paquito de Rivera, he is well-known as a saxophonist. He plays the clarinet. He's a composer, and he's a jazz and classical. He's a composer of both classical and jazz music. which is an interesting combination there. Paquito de Rivera
right.
has won 14 Grammy Awards.
Wow. How many? 40? 4-0? 14.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
No, no. 1-4. 1-4.
Yeah, 1-4.
1-4
sure.
Grammy Awards. And he has made more than 30 albums, okay? Interesting aspect about Paquito de Rivera, in 1988, he was a founding member of the United Nations Orchestra, which is a 15-piece ensemble organized by Dizzy Gillespie to showcase the fusion of Latin and Caribbean influences with jazz. One thing, Silvio, is that Dizzy Gillespie has been a force in helping Cuban musicians who have defected from communist regime. He has opened the doors, and I think the Cuban community owes a debt of gratitude to Dizzy Gillespie, because he has really opened up his arms and his influence to help newly arrived Cuban musicians as well.
Right,
one of the things that – go ahead.
I was just going to say that in the case of Paquito and Arturo, those are two examples on your list of – or in your book of two who have defected. And
yes.
And I think that tells you – that puts him not necessarily in a special place, but it puts him in a little slightly different place than some of the others, because Paquito and Arturo clearly understood the need to leave Cuba. They could never
yes.
– the success that they've enjoyed – and by success, I don't mean just money, okay, because success is not all about money. When you are as good as these guys are, sure, you want to make that. There's nothing wrong with that. But it's the space for creativity that you're allowed in the United States that you're not allowed in Cuba. I think for a true artist, that space is essential. So that's why I think you and I and everybody benefits from the fact that these two guys defected, because we get to hear how good they are. Not in Cuba, they were limited. No matter what they say in Cuba, they do limit their artists quite a bit, Fernando.
Yes, you're absolutely correct. Let's not forget that in 2005, Paquito de Rivera, he wrote a public letter where he criticized Carlos Santana, because Carlos Santana, he went to the 2005 Academy Awards ceremony wearing
right.
a Che Guevara T-shirt. And
that's right.
What Paquito de Rivera said in that public letter is the fact that, hey, I came from a communist regime where people have been executed, including Paquito's own cousin had been executed in a firing squad because of his
mm-hmm.
Political views. So that was
right.
a really touchy moment. There.
No, that was a home run, as we like to say, that he said that, because he stood up.
Yep.
And I'm sure Santana, like a lot of other people who wear Che Guevara T-shirts, don't have a clue. Absolute clue of who Che Guevara is. They think he's Jim Morrison's brother or something like that, and they put on because he kind of looks like Jim Morrison, I guess. And but no, I mean, Che Guevara was a killer and assassin, and I'm glad that Paquito did that. Well, my friend, we're just about out of time, but here's what I wanted to do to close it with this idea. I want you to take a minute or so and maybe explain to a young person like your children or my children who were born here, who are Cuban, of course, because of you and I, but who maybe are still not learning or maybe know enough about the Cuban story. So explain to them, if you could, just how influential Cubans have been in music here in the United States. So just imagine you were talking to our children, Fernando. Just why is this information important in your opinion?
Right. Well, I would say to my children and other folks that they should be very proud that Cuba produced a great composer by the name of Ernesto Lecuona, who wrote the music scores for 6 American-made films in the 1940s and 50s, 6 different movies that Ernesto Lecuona wrote the music for. And this particular Ernesto Lecuona, he was known as the Cuban Gershwin, because of his tremendous musical ability, that even to this day, his music resounds all over the world. This is just a brief example of that I hope people can delve and study and look up important people such as Ernesto Lecuona, Paquito de Rivera, Cándido, Graciela, Machito, all of these great influences of American jazz were implemented by Cubans who immigrated to the United States and displayed their God-given talent in making this a great country of music.
Absolutely. No, you couldn't have said it any better. And your mentioning Lecuona gives me a wonderful bridge to how we're going to end the show, because, as you know, we did a show on Ernesto Lecuona a few years ago, and Ernesto Lecuona is an absolutely wonderful musician who in 1954 recorded by himself on the piano some wonderful, you know, performances of his songs. That album is now available in digital format. My father actually had it in the LP format, the RCA LP format, and I recently got it on the CD digital format. So I'm going to thank you, Fernando, for, first of all, thank you for writing this book. I mean, this is, as I say, these contributions are very important. I know sometimes we don't, you know, when we're working, writing a book, we don't always think of these things, but these are great contributions to our heritage, to our bookshelf, to our library of our heritage. So I want to thank you personally for writing this book, and I hope it's a great success. I know that it will be. I want to tell everybody out there, I want to tell everybody, get yourself a copy of the book. As I say, it's informative, it's entertaining. And now all you have to promise me is that when you write your fourth book, that you'll give me an interview.
Sure. Thank you so much. Sylvia, one question before I forget.
Sure.
When will this program be available for people to listen to?
Well, it'll be available roughly in about an hour. It'll be available on it's actually available technically right now. They can hear it right now if they're on the internet, but the podcast will go up early Tuesday afternoon. So by 2 o'clock, by 2 o'clock Central Time, it'll be available. I'll be posting it on Facebook and on Twitter and later on. So it'll be on very shortly. I usually put them up about an hour after the show because a lot of times it takes that long to upload it. So I don't want to put it up and have no sound, you know. So that's why I wait a little bit. But it'll be in about an hour. And
you can
share it with all your friends. And again, congratulations to you on the wonderful work that you do and all your contributions to our heritage. It's just great.
Thank you, Sylvia. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Fernando Hernandez, we have a link to the book on the show information. I also put a little link over in Facebook this morning. Get yourself a copy of the book. I mean, it is truly, truly an amazing book. Speaking of Ernesto Lecuona, we say goodbye with one of his greatest melodies. Bye-bye, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.